This is 16-9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16-9 has been online now for more than a decade, writing about the digital signage industry and filtering all the BS. Now 16-9 is also a podcast, a chance to talk to smart people doing interesting things in this business. You can listen to episodes online, grab it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to grab the RSS feed. 16-9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. This week, we're talking experience design with Sean Keithley, the president of Adrenaline, an Atlanta-based company that's in the business of coming up with the strategy, the content, and technologies to make spaces like banks, stores, and hospitals really work. Sean talks about the process involved in putting together a successful project, and he made me happy when he said projects they do start out by asking and getting answered from clients one big question: why? We get into some of the work the company has done with clients like E-Trade and New Balance, and also explore how and where digital display technology works or doesn't. We did this by Skype, and we were both fighting raging head colds, which will explain some scratchy voices. Enjoy. Sean, thanks for joining us. Can you give me a bit of a background on Adrenaline and how it relates as well to Newground?
Sure. Thanks, Dave. I'm happy to be here. Adrenaline is a experience design company. We've gone to market in our current form for about 3 years, and we're part of a holding company that also includes Newground. So we're two independent companies that serve different customer bases, and part of the companies that really do think about making experiences real for our clients.
So what does experience design mean?
Well, as we launched the repackaged Adrenaline 3 years ago, and we looked into experience design, a lot of what comes up and or came up and still does is really all about web and online, UI, UX. And We really think about it differently. And what we think about as more and more of the world goes online, the way we shop, buy, communicate, the idea of experiences in the real world really have a higher level of meaning. Why would you do something, physically versus doing it online? And then that's really kind of how we think about experience design, designing experiences that really spark a chemistry between that brand and that end consumer.
So what would be a typical client engagement for you guys?
Well, we serve a variety of different verticals. We do some work in retail, a heavy influence of work in financial services, and really a growing amount of interest in work in healthcare as they start to think of their patients more as consumers. But think about E-Trade as an example. E-Trade has long had a very dominant presence online, really pioneers in some of the things you do from a brokerage standpoint online, spending a lot of their time and effort, energy, money on their overall brand perception, as you see Kevin Spacey and the TV commercials and everything they're doing to grow the brand, but came to us and said, we really feel like that's a total letdown as clients do pick us and come meet people in a physical space. And, as much talk as there's been about the role of physical space, whether it's financial services or, retail shopping, when you do choose to do physical, again, the stakes are higher. And we often focus very heavily, not only on the consumer, but on the employee. And, how do we create spaces that allow them to do their job better? And so we're proud to be opening a new E-Trade flagship in the Chrysler Building in middle of New York City in the next week or so that will really fulfill their promise to their consumers that they can have a great experience really no matter what channel you want to reach them on. And we'll be working with them to work that experience across other physical footprints they have across the country. We did the same for New Balance. New Balance online stores are doing extremely well. The brand's growing. They're after a couple of really huge names in the space, so they're trying to be very aggressive. And yet they really hadn't done a good job, their words, at physical locations creating flagships. And so we've been helping them with their flagship endeavor that started last summer, and now they've got some flagships that are pretty amazing stores: Boston, San Francisco, Tokyo, Madrid. So, you know, a lot of what we do, although it may be in different verticals, our clients are really often trying to solve for the same things.
And what I've found with a lot of designed retail spaces, particularly if they're using digital, is they've thrown a lot of technology into the space and tried to create this idea of wow factor. And I'd say in darn near every case, it falls down because they're not really thinking about the overall experience. They're just throwing technology in. Or I've seen other stores that are just all about design, but don't necessarily work at stores. So I'm gathering what you're saying is you have to put all those things together and work in sync, or it's not going to really happen.
We agree with you, and that's what, you know, makes us wake up every day passionate about helping people. You know, the bright, shiny object often shows up. People aren't thinking about the simple question, why? Or from a content perspective, often, you know, those solutions are handed to a team that's going to live with it for the next 5 years. And so we really think about everything through a framework, thinking of the consumer. And we were able to do a matrix through a space to think about the different goals of that consumer as they traverse through the space. I'll take an example. You know, the attract zone is really your first impression. And certainly what you're trying to do from an objective standpoint in the attract zone is going to be very different from the welcome zone. The welcome zone, you're starting to embrace that physical space, but you have to understand your time in that space could be seconds. So let's don't tell a 2-minute story where you're going to spend 15 seconds. Uh-huh. So as we think about things from a strategic standpoint, we think about that consumer journey and how the staff is going to help make that real. And that kind of framework really does filter through a lot of the challenges you see that we really see every day is bad practice.
Yeah, I see lots of that. You have a digital signage wing within the company. Do you use digital signage as a matter of course in most of the projects you're involved in, or you use it where it fits?
Well, we're always solving customers' solutions or providing customer solutions to problems. I'll tell you, I've been doing this with this company for 10 years. Very rarely is digital signage not a part of the solution. You know, most people are trying to spend more energy in a more precise way to create a better overall environment. They're looking for A locations. You know, there's been a big focus on urban centers, you know, following the population. And it's just very rare today that someone wants to invest in a major renovation or a new prototype and not use digital signage as a communication tool, even as an architectural element to help, you know, create a lively space. So although I would say it's not a foregone conclusion, as we start with a strategy that really does start before the design, certainly our ability to integrate digital, and then, you know, what's really unique about Adrenaline is we are truly a creative agency, which is the second leg of the stool, and helping people understand what they're going to do from a content perspective before we've even spec'd hardware.
So let's go back to E-Trade, if you can, given that it's opening in a week or so. Can you say what all is involved there? What's the digital component of it? And what was the thinking around what was put in?
Well, you know, with E-Trade's a good example. It's really bigger than a digital solution, but they'll absolutely have a digital solution as a part of it. It really starts with their recommitment to the function of the staff, given the business model needs of an E-Trade associate today. Okay, and so what had happened, they have got new roles with new ways of serving clients, and their physical place was stuck in the old business model. We also wanted to really create, in the fact of the New York example, you know, truly a billboard-like branch. You know, it's very expensive to advertise in Manhattan. Uh-huh. They decided to pick a location that had a lot of eyeballs. And we want that store attracting people day and night, you know, weekday and weekend. And so our customer solution that was inclusive of a journey of a client, what are the different reasons a client would visit the E-Trade store? What are the different way associates add value to a client's visit in person? And then do we come up with the location and the actual experience components that make that real. And from a technology standpoint, there's a couple of things that happen there. There is a large video wall that really doubles as a billboard, if you will. It's going to be seen, you know, through the windows and create energy at night, and you're going to really know that now something pretty special is opened on this street that didn't otherwise exist. But there are a few days a month or a couple of weeks a year where they may even do seminars. And so we've designed the space to be very functional, and things on casters can roll and change, and now they can control that video wall and use it for seminars. And then during daytime, when none of those things are happening, off hours or seminars, you know, we've got some gentle branding, maybe some product reinforcement, you know, maybe some news about what E-Trade's doing in the community. So, you know, again, it's a part of an overall solution. Another huge theme we're seeing is iPads, and we're getting tablets in the hands of associates and really understanding the right place for interactivity and how it's used best. And for the E-Trade associates, it's going to be about comparing products, you know, checking, you know, options, you know, charts that show different things. You know, we deal a lot with these service retailers. They don't have a tangible product. And so they've got to use technology to help illustrate to their clients a more visualization of the product.
When it comes to designing this experience, how do you know when it's working? How do you define a good, successful experience for customer and, as you were saying, also for staffing?
Well, we're careful not to guarantee it or claim, you know, specific things or the reasons. At the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of things that have to work right to make a new space work. What we've really done to ensure to the highest degree possible we have success is a couple of things. One, we're going to make spaces, you know, branded and aesthetically pleasing, exciting. That makes them fun to work in. That makes them fun to visit. And they do become a physical manifestation of a brand. So we like to say that if you've gone online and been excited about a brand, you shouldn't experience much different when you visit a space. Number two is we've really thought about the consumer that's going to use that space. And through strategy sessions and stakeholders in the organization, we really understand, you know, why they would come and how we create a good visit. So it's very strategic and not just, like you mentioned, throwing technology in a space. And then finally, which is, you know, really unique around us, we actually do culture training. And we haven't done a design program in a couple of years where we didn't book in the strategy that kicked it off with actually a culture session for the employees. They're going to have to make that space work for them. And it's a combination of bringing in short form a little bit, some of the background and strategy about why things are in the space, taking them through some of those paths of the consumer journey for the different reason codes they might visit the space, and just really making sure they understand why things are there. And if you can do that, make it feel on brand, really function for the consumer's visit, and make sure the staff that works there is going to feel like it was designed just for them, those are the types of programs that we see not only working, but becoming a model that we can, you know, port across a physical footprint for a client and continue that strategy.
So this is a very different engagement than a systems integrator would have with a new retailer in a flagship store, you know, where there may be a meeting with or a set of meetings with the architects, but it's really about a company coming in and installing stuff. You're talking about a whole process and a whole mindset that a client has to invest in.
Completely different. We often get calls from people that have maybe had a challenge with the project. It happens probably far too often, but we save a lot of jobs. We got to get called in at halftime. Uh-huh. And a lot of times what they feel like they've done is they've gotten way too far down the road before they started thinking about the people that can make it real and bring it to life. And we really have to bring all of that up front from a strategic standpoint. What are we solving for? How can we afford it? Can we scale it across other sites if that's important? What's the content strategy going to be? And that all precedes design. So we really try to come at this from maybe the opposite angle of a strong integrator that does all the back end.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing consulting for a number of years now, and as you were saying, my first question is always why? Why do you want to do this? And I find it's incredibly hard to get a lot of clients to buy into the idea that they need to think all this stuff through. It's almost like they have to make a mistake first before they realize, oh, I guess we should have done that.
I think one of the things we run into a lot is just the pace. And it just seems in today's economy in the world, everyone is in such a hurry. And certainly, once you've got funding, maybe once for E-Trade's case, you know, once you've signed a lease and you've got coming soon signs in the middle of New York City. And what we tell our clients, we're going to slow you down at first to create alignment and really paint a target, and then we can go fast. And a lot of our customers aren't thinking about a one-off site. A lot of our clients have at least another or multiple, sometimes hundreds of endpoints. And so we really encourage them to go through one of our strategic sessions to create the whys and to create alignment with internal stakeholders so that we can then speed up. And it's a process called design application, which allows us to do a design in another location without starting over or without creating a cookie cutter. And so I do tell people, we're going to slow you down to speed you up. Uh-huh. And we're going to invest more up front, a lot of times to spend less. Because to your point, we have a lot of good clients that will tell you or anybody, we talked them out of a lot of expensive things because there just wasn't a good reason to do them at the end of the day.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now back to the podcast.
Have you, and particularly the digital side of your team, learned some lessons about what works in the context of digital display in a retail or healthcare environment or other, and what doesn't?
We're really students of the game. We travel the country and the world looking at interesting things. We learn as much from things we do that go well, from things that we do that don't go well, to things that we see others do. And we don't go ask the CEO or the head of PR or the design firm why they did it. We go talk to the head of the facility, the branch manager, the store manager, and ask questions. You know, how are your clients reacting to that? How many times is that being used? Is this valuable? And so by all three of those things being combined, you continue to learn. And I think as soon as you say you've got it all figured out, you're in trouble, because there are new technologies, you know, every day that are being debuted. And we just kind of, our clients use us as a filter to really understand, you know, what's affordable, what won't break, what's scalable, what works in daylight and nighttime and external face and exterior. You know, that's our job.
Let's talk about some of the technologies. The big bugaboo for me in a lot of retail and in other public spaces as well are interactive screens and this idea of customer or visitor engagement. And what I see endlessly are touchscreens put in without a whole hell of a lot of thought about what those touchscreens are actually doing or going, what they're going to deliver for the user. So they just sit there. How do you get beyond that? How do you make it work properly?
Well, what you described keeps us busy, so I'm not complaining. It happens all the time. I got a call about an hour ago. There's a big regional integrator. They've got a big project. They've got a $50,000 video wall going in, and the team doesn't have a clue what they're going to do from a content perspective. And now there's a 911 because this thing's going in.
Yeah.
And so, again, you know, I hope one day our brand is so amazing and we're so well known that when people have an issue, they're going to call us and we're going to start from the beginning and we're going to do it how you like it. But at the end of the day, we're not there yet, and we're doing these kind of emergency visits. If you can get ahead of that, really our process prevents it. You know, vertical touchscreens and healthcare and financial are a bad idea. Why am I going to talk about my jumbo mortgage or the fact that I've got a cold and put that on display? You've got to get that down in a horizontal, you know, private way, more intimate. Most of the time, not going to be used anyway unless there's a staff person that understands the value, can do it, that device in that pocket or purse is by far the first choice. Mm-hmm. And so really helping people think through that, I think our experience with all of the projects we've done, and being candid to say that, you know, we're not proud of a bunch of Microsoft touch tables in 2013 that the client wanted to get rid of. And so we've learned the hard way as clients have been aggressive and wanted to do new and exciting things. But more and more, if we just hold back to, you know, those core values of what we believe, if you can make it better for the employee or the customer, then it's safe. Otherwise, there's too many other demand for CapEx. Let's put those down the list. And that's really served us well.
And I would assume the same process helps when you're working with clients to let them understand or force them to understand they have to think about sustainable content strategies, not the content they're going to have there for the grand opening.
That's really where our strategic start helps, because we're bringing all of the stakeholders at the table for the whole journey. And that helps a lot, because you get some people that their job is done when the store opens. And you get others, their job starts when the store opens. I'll give you a good example. We had a top 10 bank wanting to do some pretty impressive flagships, and there was a high-powered architect involved, and we got hired in after the concept phase because we were doing the content for the marketing people. And they were really upset because every flagship was getting a different aspect ratio for the video wall. And it's just a small example where the marketing people understood that we would help prevent that, mm-hmm. because what they couldn't have is they had a flagship in 10 different states to then have 10 versions, not only because of different content you want to do, because they have a different aspect ratio. And this is a well-known international architect. So really, really getting everybody that has a say and understanding what their role is, that helps a lot. I say a lot of times that we should just have a big couch for these big organizations, because we're bringing the silos together and we're making everybody work nice together. But that's a big part of our strategy approach.
Is it challenging when you're working with a large client like that in financial services or healthcare, when you've got, I don't want to say egos, but you've got agencies, the agencies of record for these organizations, and then you've got architects, and there you are in the midst of this. Is it challenging to navigate this so that you're not perceived as the enemy?
What we found with our clients, and you know, the larger their institution, and honestly, sometimes the more sophistication, there are either in-house capabilities or other relationships that are important. And our business has grown considerably as we've adopted the idea we don't have to do it all, even if we're capable of doing it all, because often the problem is not replacing everything. There's often a hole. And so just that approach has been great. Our big customers taught us that. We've just quit agreeing to do it and made it a strategy. We say that because we understand some of the parts we may not be doing, our work is informed by it. So that makes us a better partner. And at the end of the day, as long as we're not keeping score, and what I mean by that, let's say there's an agency or there's an architect, we're making collective decisions and then presenting to a client, and we're not saying whose idea it was. We're saying we've collaborated. And that's what people really want. That they want as many partners as it takes to do something amazing and as few as possible. And so we try to make it easy. And that helps a ton. We certainly love when we're able to be the agency, the architect, and the digital company. But it's not important that's how it works if that's not what the client needs.
You're talking about very large organizations here for the most part. Are these the sorts of disciplines that can also work at a much smaller scale for?
I'm bad about that because sometimes I'm more involved or they're more recognizable. But if you were to look at the just numbers, it's probably not even typical. Just take financial services. 5 banks have 45% of the market. Well, there's over 7,000 that have the rest. So we don't really think about clients in terms of size. Uh-huh. We think about fit. Okay, that's both in what they need from us and even chemistry. And we think about people that value a partner. And so that may translate down to, we got a great example. One of my favorite clients right now is at a community bank in Texas. He has 27 locations. Now, he worked with Jamie Dimon at Chase. He's a very smart man. It's just that at this stage in his career, he's chosen to go help a community bank. And our work applies perfectly. Our strategy does not change. His team went through the same ideation session that Charles Schwab did, or E-Trade, or New Balance. And so sometimes they're more fun because they go faster. You have definitely less egos. And we can make change happen on a more, you know, enterprise level when someone has 27 locations. Then when we're talking to a client next week that has 3,000, that can be a little more difficult. So we do all and above, small to large. It really is more about, are their needs in alignment with what Adrillon's passionate about doing?
Right. The customer journey for retail and for financial services, does that translate to healthcare, which you're now kind of digging into, or is it a very different animal? And I'm also curious, what all are you doing in healthcare?
It's really not any different. There's a Forbes quote, I won't get it right by memory, but basically what it's warning the healthcare providers, you know, your patient's being trained by the best in retail and hospitality. We had a large healthcare system in our flagship office today. And the new head of consumer experience is coming from the airline industry. So right then, you know, they're thinking about it differently. But he said, we're trying to talk about our patients as consumers. And he says, that's hard for some people to do that have been at the system for 20 years. But that's how we think about it. And then that's how we think about it. That consumer that goes to Charles Schwab or to the New Balance flagship may also go to that hospital system. And so as long as you can think about it in terms of the business model and the reason for their visit, it actually makes more sense that you've thought about it on a more broader, on a more broad consumer index, because consumers don't think about channels and verticals. They think about things they need and who's going to help them get what they need.
And the experience is obviously different with a hospital. Story, you're going in to get stuff. In a hospital, you're going in to see somebody or you're going in to get something done. You know, the emotions can be quite different.
Well, and for healthcare, you know, the different types of facilities that are part of their enterprise are different. For instance, you know, we've got a big system in Chicago. They've got urban hospitals downtown, but they've got medical office buildings in the suburbs. They're now getting into urgent care, you know, so they start to have multiple outlets where the experience is even very different within their own organization. And that's why you have to apply the strategy, the overall consumer matrix goals, but they have to be applied to each site because it's very different if you're going in to have a baby versus in you've got the cold I've got and you need to go see, you know, someone at 6:30 tonight with no appointment.
Right.
And yet those are part of the same company.
How is digital being used in healthcare? I've certainly seen digital donor walls and I've seen directories and wayfinding, but are there other ways that it's being applied?
Well, those are a couple of big ones for sure. Although we were talking to a company out of Europe that's going to send wayfinding to your phone. And, you know, I think, you know, that has a lot more legs than some big clunky system that you've got to touch in a hospital that may be full of germs.
I agree.
So, you know, continuing to think about the personal device, the interaction with that device, things that are happening from an experience before you show up. But other than that, I don't think there's any kind of silver bullet. You know, you know as well as I that in certain urban centers, digital is a big part of the architectural display. More and more healthcare facilitators are including more retail components as a part of their franchise. And so you've got to think about digital that way. Big healthcare systems, we have one that's in Oakland and Long Island. And so digital allows them to stay local, you know, no different than one of our banking clients. So, sometimes, you know, Adrillon really, we just keep it real. We're not going to tell you that we do have that newest, shiniest object, and it's going to be groundbreaking. Most of the time, it's more about strategic blocking and tackling, solving for the why, and executing in a way that's going to ensure success. Mm-hmm. And that really serves us a whole lot better for the customers we serve.
One of the things that struck me about your company when I met with a guy who you've hired recently, and had lunch, and I poked around your website first and saw that there were a lot of gray hairs in your organization as opposed to a bunch of millennials. It seems like a different approach for a digital agency where you don't have a bunch of kids who are, you know, just excited about the next big thing.
Well, my HR director would love this. I don't think about age. We just hire for talent, but I do think we do have a gray hair for every millennial. We've got both. And, I quite honestly, that's what we think we need. I've got an experienced designer that 2 years out of school got to work on a pretty cool project in the Middle East that was going to take 4 years to finish. And we stole her. And now we've partnered her with an architect that's been with the company 22 years. More and more, my job as president is really the chief talent officer. And as I meet people in the space that have energy or chemistry, I think will serve our brand, help us think more strategically. We hire them. And the gentleman you met in Toronto, he's a gray hair. But if you ask 10 people what they thought about him, it'd all be positive. And he's going to add value to our organization. And we'll team him with a 24-year-old that's hair is on fire and has all the answers. And we'll think that blend will be better than if we just had a design shop, you know, full of millennials.
Right. Last question. In terms of technologies that you're seeing out there, I assume that you and the folks who work for you invest a fair amount of time paying attention to what's coming. Are there technologies that you're seeing right now or on the near horizon that that gets you excited?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a good question. You know, a lot of the things I've gotten excited over the years have never become part of our solutions. It's our job to keep tabs on them. I get more excited when a product 3 years ago becomes affordable because there's competition in the space now. And, you know, that's more how we think about it. You know, if you're a financial system or a retailer in today's world, it is really hard to invest offline and online. And that's our clients' problems. They've got to have a huge digital presence, but they can't get rid of their physical stores. And so I don't say that, you know, everything we design is frugal, but it's got to have value. I think, though, that technology will continue to evolve. I think the things that are most interesting to think about are the things that are going to interact with the personal device, because I think that's what a consumer wants. You know, 4K content's great, and I love these tiles that we can use as wallpaper, but I think that if I can sit in my underwear on the couch and do some research and start a journey that continues in a store, and somehow that's valuable to me, those are the things people have to be thinking about.
And that's something I get asked about that a lot, that nobody that I've seen has really cracked that code yet.
No, that's a hard one. I mean, the consumer today is spoiled. They walk around with a coffee that has six adjectives on it. These millennials have been trained by these companies like Amazon and Google. They make it all easy.
Yeah.
And when you've got legacy equipment, legacy systems, legacy executives, you know, this stuff is hard. And it is much easier for a startup to do what they want. But it's the same reason that startups don't all survive. You know, you need structure and scale. And so, you know, I think that human experience is what we're about. And if we can stay focused on that, you know, spark that chemistry. Again, employees huge. I haven't seen a digital space with a great design that was completely successful if there wasn't a good staff there. And so those are the things that we really focus on, and our customers seem to find value in it.
Good way to end it. Thank you.
Yeah, it was good, Dave.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.